south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, it's 2022. How many weeks or months will it take you to finally start writing 2022 instead of 21? Usually takes me about 2 months to get into the groove. How about you? All right, let's start out with a few comments about an article that's getting a lot of air and internet play entitled, China is rapidly expanding its interest in Latin America as U.S. influence wanes. It's kind of a warning to gringos and expats and the world. If they move to Latin America, they can expect lots of Chinese influence. Well, you know, after living down here more than 30 years now, I can tell you, that alarming title flies in the face of what I'm seeing. I almost never run into Chinese people or see them at the mall, except maybe the very infrequent tourist, and I mean infrequent. Even when flying into big international airports like in Mexico City or Panama City, you just don't see too many at all. They're there, all right. But you only see one Chinese person out of maybe 500 or even 1,000 people, and I'm seeing no Chinese lettering anywhere except at Chinese restaurants and stamped on boxes coming from China because virtually everything manufactured comes from China. Meanwhile, a lot of these recent articles are making it seem like the Chinese are overrunning the place. Well, sure, they're down here buying up stuff and making deals with governments because governments are broke and they'll always take money wherever they can get it. But I'll tell you this, the Chinese have been burned awful bad in the last 10 or 20 years when they initially invested in Venezuela and Nicaragua. Yep, they came in like gangbusters 15 or 20 years ago, but they're more cautious now. The first slap was with Venezuela when they defaulted on the loans they took out from China. The second slap was Nicaragua. And if you remember, in Nicaragua, the Chinese were trying to make another canal. They spent billions, and after many false starts and many political payoffs, they badly miscalculated and had to abandon the whole project. And now, and I've heard this from a few Chinese investors myself, they're gun-shy about investing heavily in Latin America. Sure, Latin America is a huge market for their products, just like the U.S. and Europe. You know, down here, like up in the U.S., when you go to a hardware or appliance store, practically everything's made in China, too. And they're still making all kinds of side deals with scumbag government bureaucrats for mineral rights and such. And the cell and internet companies are using Chinese equipment. I mean, the Chinese make everything, right? But the truth is, and people don't like to hear the truth, first world woke people, that is, unless it's their version of the truth, as if there are different versions of the truth. The vast majority of Latin Americans, and in fact, I'd have to say close to 100% of them, they don't actually dislike Chinese people. They just don't want to have anything to do with them. They've got nothing in common with them. They don't want to be like them. They don't admire them. They don't want to live next door to them. They don't want their kids marrying or dating them. They don't understand anything about the Chinese culture and have no interest in it either. Latino schools don't teach about Chinese or Chinese culture. They have no interest in learning any of the Chinese dialects. If they have any interest in learning any language at all, it's always English. That's not to say that Latinos dislike or hate the Chinese. Not at all. It's just that they're way too far apart culturally to ever mix. And I can prove it. For all the dozens, if not hundreds, of parties and get-togethers I've been at in the last 30 years living down here in Latin America, I've never met a single Chinese person there or saw one in attendance. But maybe I'm just hanging out with the wrong lowlifes. Though over the years, I've been to a few parties thrown by New York gringos who own maquilas, you know, clothing factories here in Latin America, and some Koreans were occasionally in attendance, but just a very few. That's because there's a Korean business connection with those clothing factories. Lots of Koreans own them here in Latin America. But they, too, keep very much to themselves. And my gringo buddies in the clothing business tell me the Koreans don't blend with the locals at all, either, or with the New York factory owner contingent. And they only get invited to certain events for the business connection. That's it. Now, I'm bringing this up to make the point. If the first world media thinks the Chinese are infiltrating Latin America, well, they're right to a degree. Their products are down here and they're spreading their money around, just like they are in the States, Europe, Canada, and Australia. The thing is, you have to live down here and see for yourself that there's a cultural wall that just cannot be breached. And of course, you've all heard of the gringo advantage. Well, there's no such thing as a Chinese advantage. In fact, it's more like a Chinese disadvantage. Everyone wants to be like and emulate gringos, but no one wants to be like or emulate the Chinese. Besides that, many Latino governments have burned their bridges with the Chinese and defaulted on their loans. So bottom line, as far as the Chinese influence here in Latin America, it's no more and probably much less than the influence they have up in the States and Europe. Besides that, the Chinese are not down here in Latin America to steal patents and trade secrets, because there are none here in Latin America. The Latinos don't have a culture of inventiveness or patents. So the Chinese aren't sneaking around trying to steal trade secrets and intellectual property. That's their mission in the first world, not the third. So am I worried about the Chinese influence here in Latin America? Not much, and what there is of it, I think, is highly exaggerated. Why would I be when I can walk around for days and days in a huge city and not see a single Chinese person? Even the Chinese restaurants are mostly staffed with Latinos. The question is, or ought to be, if they're taking over, where are they? By the way, as far as my February seminar starts on the 18th, once again, the COVIDiot rules are in flux. They've changed them again. Looks like as of January 10th, people will need to be vaxxed to fly into Guatemala. So, here's what we're going to do. Since a lot of our attendees are unvaxxed, it looks like, and we're not 100% certain yet, we'll have it figured out in a few days, that everyone will be flying into El Salvador's airport instead of Guatemala's, because El Salvador does not have a vax requirement. So stay tuned for more on that. The good thing is, the airlines are allowing people to change their flights and destinations without a penalty due to ever-changing COVIDiot crap. Oh, and by the way, there's still time to sign up for the seminar. Just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. Oh, and you want to hear a little boots-on-the-ground New Year's Eve story? Well, I went to one of those all-inclusive resorts. And man, did this place put on a spread. They set up a portable dance floor on the beach, like 10 feet from the water. And the entertainment started around 9 o'clock. They had a live band and a DJ right on the beach. They flew in a troupe of Cuban dancing girls direct from Cuba. They were all decked out Carmen Miranda style. Fruit, bananas, pineapples in their hair, the works. Man, could they wiggle and jiggle. And after they came on, the obligatory singers and dancers. Sort of Vegas and Cirque du Soleil style. Then, around 11 o'clock, came the firewalkers, fire breathers, and fire acrobats. Man, those guys were taking their lives in their own hands, but I guess they knew what they were doing. No one got burned. At least I think no one got burned. No one seemed injured. But you never know. If you do that for a living, you know how to hide it. Then, about 10 minutes before midnight, the MC did the usual "where are you from" bit. He said first, "shout out people from Mexico," and probably 50 people shouted out. Then "shout out Colombia," another 50 people. Then it was "shout out Guatemala," another 30 people. Honduras, another 40. And on through all the 20 Latin American countries. Then there was a shout out for Canada, about 20 people. Then a shout out for Russia, and yep, about 20 comrades were there. Da. And finally, shout out USA, Estados Unidos. Guess what? Me, Johnny, the only gringo in the place. There must have been 500 people at that exclusive beach party and was only one gringo, me. And man, was my gringo advantage sailing that night. Oh, and the number of Chinese or Asian people at that party? Zero. Which just goes to show you really have to have boots on the ground to know enough to write a decent article or blog. You can't just sit on your sofa up in Cleveland and write a story about the Chinese invasion of Latin America if you've never been there before. Oh, and something else happened that might amuse you. I was talking about my gringo advantage, right? Well, at midnight, they had a huge fireworks display, like 50 feet from the ocean. And when those things exploded, it was scary loud. It was the closest I've ever been to where they launched the big stuff. Anyway, there was a beach bar right there, too, and I moseyed over, ordered a drink, lit up a cohiba, and plopped down in a little sitting area. There was about 10 other people sitting around, too. I didn't know any of them. Turns out, though, three or four of them were from Venezuela. And, you know, I always like to ask Venezuelans I meet how they escaped and what they're doing now, how they're surviving. And these three guys, they were family, were in the leather accessory business in Caracas. The family was in business like 75 years, and they went bankrupt. Due to Hugo Chavez's wonderful socialistic economic miracle. Man, did those guys hate Chavez. Anyway, they made leather belts, purses, even upscale horse saddles and accessories for equestrians. And the market dried up when Hugo Chavez started nationalizing everything after about 2008, which started the brain drain and the wealth drain. They said their high-end client base all dried up. So they planned their escape by going to a leather goods sales convention in Bogota, Colombia. A routine trip, but they never went back. Then, as we got to talking, they started explaining how they're so disappointed that the rest of the world doesn't understand what's really happening in Venezuela. The older guy said they run into people all the time, especially Europeans. Now get this. who, when they start talking about Venezuela and the problems there, always somehow try to pin the cause on the U.S. embargo and U.S. and CIA interference in regime change. The older guy said it's like a broken record. People who've never been to Venezuela before always blame it on the U.S. There's lots of propaganda out there, a repeating mantra that says U.S. embargo has destroyed the Venezuelan currency and caused all the economic problems they're experiencing now. To which those guys said only the ignorant believe that, only people who've never been to Venezuela. And I said, tell me more. He said, if you've got money, anything but the local currency, bolivars, you can buy anything. Sure, they said, the U.S. has an embargo on goods, but they don't have any goods to sell. The U.S. doesn't make anything. It doesn't manufacture anything anymore. What are they going to do? Prohibit Happy Meals and Harleys? He said, if you go to the stores in Venezuela, you'll see everything comes from China or Brazil or Colombia or Europe, and it's very expensive, but it's all there. These days, they said, a U.S. embargo is totally laughable because TVs, microwaves, paint, washing machines, computers, cell phones, they're all made in China or Mexico or Colombia or Brazil. And cars are all made in Mexico, Brazil, Europe, or Korea. It's so funny, they said, especially when they have a long discussion with a European who always think U.S. imperialism is to blame. But those big-mouth Europeans have never been to Venezuela. They're just buying into the U.S. embargo propaganda. People would rather believe the propaganda than investigate. It's easier. All right, enough said about that. Now an email. This comes from upcoming seminar attendee James. He says, you may recall, Johnny, I'm a pilot. As such, I still get to travel quite a bit and see different places in the U.S. and also other parts of the world. Well, I'm in Monterey, California now, and it's definitely the place to be selling masks. People seem to be addicted to them here. I guess you could consider me a rebel because I'm driving a car alone without a mask. Shame on me. I'm still amazed as how much insanity I've seen here. For example, it's a bit chilly here this morning, and I thought I'd go to the hotel gym. I spotted it yesterday, and actually quite a nice setup. Well, guess what? Everyone is wearing masks in the gym. Lifting weights, running on treadmills, you name it, they're masked up. So I went in, did some weights with no mask, and got the evil eye. Then I decided, outside where it's a bit colder might be a better place to work out. The good news is I've noticed across the country, though, people in the gym finally do wipe down their exercise equipment when they're done. Thank God for small favors. See you at the seminar, James. Well, James, thanks for that little comment about the People's Republic of California. But I'll admit, you hit on one of my pet peeves. The very reason I've always had my own gym in the house, why I never signed up for a gym membership anywhere. Even when I had a free membership to any Gold's Gym because they sponsored my radio program, I never went. Why? Because of the lack of hygiene. You sit and touch machines that hundreds of other people have sat and touched and sweated, farted, and drooled on. Yet you almost never see anyone wiping down. If they do, they don't use any disinfectant, just a moist or dry towel. Not good. So I guess there is a small positive secondary effect to this COVIDiot nonsense. At least people are getting into the habit of being more hygienic in a general sense. Though this COVIDiot thing has caused yet another problem. Where do you dump your used masks? I see them all over the ground here in Latin America. Of course, that could be just because this is Latin America and most people still toss their trash everywhere. It seems most every Latin American country is about 30 years behind in trash etiquette. Oh, they've got litter laws, all right, but no one enforces them. And the day they start enforcing them, that's when trash etiquette will become a priority. But until then, well, it's not pretty. Especially after a big rain, you see floating masks, plastic bottles, and other plastic bags and garbage everywhere. But you knew that already, right? And now this very interesting email from listener Art in Maui. He says, Johnny, many years back when I had a cold, a cashier from Jamaica told me when she was growing up, her mom would make this tea for her when they were sick. And they claimed it always worked. To me at the time, I thought it might be just folklore, but it turns out to be factual. It turns out it was actually hydroxychloroquine in yet another form. Did you know it's part of quinine and tonic water? And some club sodas, too, but that stuff has lots of high-fructose corn syrup, which is bad for you. So you're better off not to resort to club soda. Take some zinc with this homemade tonic. It amps up the tonic's potency. Though be moderate with the zinc, as the tonic water that's recommended is 1 tablespoon every 2 hours, whereas zinc, too much of it is not a good thing. So when sick with flu-like symptoms, you should take under 100 milligrams of zinc per day. But daily, regularly, otherwise about 25 milligrams of zinc per day. That's safe enough and effective. You can easily make this Jamaican tea for yourself and also share the recipe with your friends and family. This is Art signing off from Hawaii. Aloha. Wishing you a happy, healthy new year. Well, thanks for that, Art. You know, I always remember those old black and white Hollywood movies when people are in the jungle taking quinine pills for malaria. Why is it only now that people are putting it together that quinine, whose base is hydroxychloroquine, has always been a potent antiviral? Could it be there's no money in it? The patent ran out 100 years ago? I guess we'll have to X that world-renowned expert liar, Dr. Fauci. By the way, did you read in the news that Fauci stands to earn the largest government retirement pension payout in the history of government pension payouts? You know, I hope he lives a good long time because he won't be able to spend that dough when behind bars with a wardrobe limited to an orange jumpsuit. Enough said about that. Well, we could say more, but too much Fauci makes me want to vomit. All right, now let's talk a little bit again about getting off the grid. And you know, sustainability should be everybody's goal, but as Wes says in this email, sustainability in the States is a con job, a fake scheme that's propped up by government tax credits. And Wes, who writes this, is also coming to the upcoming seminar in February. Anyway, he has a few stark comments about trying to go off the grid in the States. He says, Johnny, most people in the contiguous 48 states and Alaska still need backup generators for solar power, even if they're attached to the grid. In the altiplano regions you talk about, of course, you don't need to worry about being too hot or too cold. But here in the States, even if you're off the grid, a generator is necessary, but more expensive and more work. In fact, we just had a small ice storm which knocked out power to hundreds. Even a friend of mine in California, who thought it would just be an inconvenience if he didn't have enough sun for a few days because he's got solar. Even he knows he needs a generator after a few days of no sun. So much for getting rid of fossil fuels, huh? I call the whole fossil fuel solar tax credit thing build back, bozo, because it's ridiculous. In my neighborhood, people have already figured it out. Wood has always been the best BTU for the buck up by me. A lot of people can't get wood, though, until next year because of the huge increase in heating oil prices. Me, Johnny here. I guess what he means is that all the wood's sold out because when oil prices ran up, people went out and bought wood. Then Wes says, fireplace inserts here for wood heating have become very popular. We already have solar in these parts, even when it doesn't make sense. And it only makes sense when you've got tax credits and the cash flow to pay up front. And these people, the ones that can afford it, all have nice automatic propane generators connected to their solar panel systems too, just in case the sun fails them. The plan is, here in Hawaii, that if there's a natural catastrophe, people with solar and who are off the grid will get by just fine. But really, just goes to show sustainability is a con job to hide behind using tax credits. It's all artificial government subsidies. For example, a friend on Oahu got a grid interactive, that means grid tied permit, before the utility was able to kill that program. She spent $30,000, not including the tax credits, just for a solar panel array, though she does have plenty of sun. No batteries, though. She's grid tied and sells some power back to the grid. Her bill dropped from $500 a month to $50, even when running an air conditioning unit. But get this, typical government. Instead of expanding the solar base to get away from fossil fuels due to its success, like with my lady friend, the government public utility hired a public relations firm who did a campaign to convince people in urban Honolulu that they were subsidizing people whose solar panels were tied to the grid, like my lady friend. Even though the power they sold back to the grid, they were being paid wholesale prices. No subsidy there. Anyway, the lady I know who's in that plan is grandfathered in, but they won't allow any more people to tie their solar panels into grids and get permits. Of course, people who were in the know early on and had the cash to afford solar panels and got plenty of sun got in on that program before the government closed the window. What's fair about that? Nothing. But that's Honolulu. On the Big Island, they have a customer self-supply system. All you need is to have a solar array on your roof and you can tie to the grid. And you don't have to have batteries. It's all allowed because it's good for the utility. They don't need to spend extra to grow the infrastructure. And because batteries are so expensive, most people will just buy their power from the grid at night because batteries don't make financial sense to them. Even with the highest priced electricity in the country, it doesn't make sense. Oh, and by the way, here in Hawaii, your electric bill is a minimum of $25 a month, even if you don't use one single watt. That's just a hookup charge. The best part or the craziest part is that the government figured out a long time ago they could power the entire state using underground volcanic heat. But that system was held up decades ago due to protesters. Even so, the existing Punta Geothermal Venture typically produces something like 30% of all the island's electrical needs, but hasn't affected the price of electricity at all. It's still the highest in the country. How does that make sense? Sign Wes in Hawaii. Well, thanks for that, Wes. And it just goes to show, as soon as government gets involved in anything, especially electricity, subsidies, tax credits, and all that crap, it just gets more complicated, less fair, and is never efficient and cost-effective. And for me, every time I get into discussions of this kind, I always ask the question, what government department would actually pass a cost-benefit analysis? Another way to put it is, what government department is actually doing a satisfactory job? What government department saves more money than it spends? What government department or departments are streamlined and efficient? How about none, none, zero, and none? But you knew that already. And now an email of the sort I've never really gotten before. You just might like this. It starts, "Dear Johnny, it's another Dave here. One from bucolic suburbs of Philadelphia. Big fan of the podcast. I believe that a huge increase in gas prices is imminent, whether due to government actions, inactions, or other geopolitical forces. And even though I'm a huge fan of electric vehicles, I never understood the anti-gas pipeline people. Wouldn't it be better to pipe it down from Canada than to move it via oil tankers, trains, and trucks? Where I'm at in Philadelphia, 1 gallon of regular gas is already over $3.75. So, realizing the trend, last year I purchased a Nissan Leaf SL Plus with a 62 kilowatt battery and 250 mile range. A little less expensive than a Tesla, but I really love it. No gas, reduced maintenance, drives fast, and I get discounts on toll roads, etc., etc. I even took it on a 2,200 mile round trip to Florida, just to get acclimated to the nuances of highway range and the various charging options and networks, and just to get used to the way electrics drive and handle. And here's what I learned from that 2,200-mile trial run trip to Florida. It's all about the charging stations and charge stops. You should map out that stuff ahead of time. Remember, I said my car has a 250-mile range limit. About the regular range limit of a gas car, but like I said, you got to find the charging stations. And charging takes time. A lot more time than just filling up with gas. And be aware there are three general levels of charging. Try not to get stuck with the worst option, the 110-volt wall outlet. You only get 5 miles of charge per hour. You know what that means. You're going to be stuck with that outlet for 24 to 36 hours to get a full charge. For me, that only works at home or in emergency situations. You don't want to be stuck with a 110 wall outlet while traveling, especially long distances. Charging option two is a standard 220-volt outlet, like a dryer outlet, where you get about 25 miles of charge per hour. So it takes about 6 to 8 hours to fill. So you have to sort of plan what you can do during that time. Best case is you're in your own bed or hotel sleeping while it's charging. Option three is a rapid charge. It's called a CHAdeMO plug. It's 45 minutes to 1 hour to get full charge. Though still, charging with any kind of charger is very cheap. The most I paid even for a fast charge to fill up was only $18. If, for example, I had a gasoline car and had a 10-gallon tank had to fill up, it'd be at least $35. So by that measure, an electric car is less than half the price for fuel than an equivalent gas car. And some electric car charging stations are actually free. Yep, but they're the slow kind. You have to wait hours for a charge, but they're free. For now, anyway. And here's a tip, Johnny. You should join all the required fee-based charging networks online ahead of time. I found four of the most common ones were, number one, Electrify America, number two, EVgo, number three, ChargePoint, number four, Blink. That way, when you pull up to one of those charge stations, you're all signed up already, and they just bill your credit card. Oh, and always charge your battery to slightly less than full. If you charge it all the way, the battery won't last as long. Now, for my question, Johnny, I want to drive my electric car from the U.S. to Guatemala. What do you think? Seems to me, Johnny, like a northerly route would be covered by more charging options and stations. Then he says, priced insurance for driving through the Mexico part, it seems to be in the $500 range for a one-month trip. Are there other insurance options? Signed, Philadelphia Dave. All right, Dave, thanks for that. Here's my take. Number one, and you're probably not going to like this answer. Your Nissan Leaf rides rather low, and those batteries are right at the bottom of the frame of the car. That means you should never drive at night. Because if you hit a pothole or one of those tumulos, they're called in Mexico, I think, policía acostados. That means a sleeping cop. The problem is you hit one of those things at a decent speed, you'll scrape the bottom frame of your car. The batteries. That's why I, who've been checking out lots of different electric car models, because I'm going to get one myself, I won't be buying a sedan. I'll be getting a small SUV or a small pickup truck, not a Tesla. I think they're too ugly. By next year, most car companies will have a pickup. You've probably seen the electric Ford F-150 pickup. That's a huge monster. I don't want anything that big. Though it seems a pretty nice vehicle if you're living in the States. In Latin America, you need maneuverability. Parking places are tight, and so are the roads. So big old fat American heavy metal, even if it's electric, just doesn't cut it. Not for me anyway, unless I lived way out in the boonies. Then that electric Ford F-150 might just be perfect. But Dave, just because your car is rather low, it shouldn't stop you from making the trip. You just have to be a lot more careful and never drive at night. And as far as insurance, you know, as you pass through borders of every country, there's always a little insurance station there. You can buy local short-term insurance just for the drive-through. Finally, Dave, you know, every high-end shopping center in Latin America seems to have a charging station these days. I'm seeing them all over the place, all the time. Now, you know more about the brands than I do. But the ones I've seen, especially at airports, you always find them at airports. You just stick in your credit card. And they've all got standard universal chargers, so all you have to have for your EV car is a universal female power adapter. So if I was making the drive, I'd just pull into a big shopping center, plug the car in. I've never seen other cars plugged in, so they're pretty much always available. Then head into the shopping mall, have lunch, whatever. Oh, and the chargers are always in guarded parking lots. In fact, I've seen them lately popping up at drive-in banks. Now, I don't see people using them, but I'm seeing them all over the place. But get this, never in low-end sections of town. Not in so-called barrios. Always in higher, wealthier, more secure sections of a city. Now, if I was planning to drive down from the States, I'd just plot out where all the major airports are. Pull my car up, get it charged at the airport, and there's always airport hotels. You stay overnight while it's being charged. Like I said, the charging stations are always in gated, guarded parking lots. In short and long-term parking at airports, too. So just work it out so that you stay at an airport hotel and have your car charged for a couple hours or maybe even overnight. That way, in most cases, your charging station will be within walking distance of your hotel. And I'm thinking if you're driving from the States to Guatemala, if you're driving straight on through, it should only require two, at most three, nights in a hotel.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.